tapestry weaves together the threads of our struggles and doubts, curiosities, our faith, our joys and hopes, to create meaningful conversations that matter. You know those late night conversations that go unexpectedly deep? That's what we want to capture with the Tapestry Podcast. And we want everyone to jump in the conversation. Because when we are heard and valued, we can begin to believe we are loved. Welcome to the Tapestry Podcast.
Good morning, good evening, wherever you are. Welcome to the Tapestry Podcast. I'm here with Mike and Heidi. What's up, guys?
Hey, how you doing?
Hi.
We are talking about vulnerability, and this is episode 3, so we're really in it. We're about to close this out with some good conversation around balancing, right? Is that what you're saying, Mike? We should talk about sort of balancing this vulnerability we've been discussing, right, and how to express it. What else?
Yeah, I mean, it's this bigger question of why do we hide? Why don't we just exhibit the mess that is each of our lives in different ways?
Yeah.
And why aren't we more vulnerable? And also, like, maybe we kind of know why we're not more vulnerable, and maybe there's some possible drawbacks and we have to be careful. And so kind of balancing some of that. And so, yeah, talking about the freedom that we can find in vulnerability, but also how it's important to kind of know who you're being vulnerable with and the space that you're being vulnerable in. Mm-hmm. And kind of, I definitely want to talk about faith communities and how this plays out in faith communities. For us, that experiences, those experiences have happened in churches, Christian churches. Mm-hmm. For me, it's been primarily in denominational contexts like mainline denominations, Presbyterian and Methodist, but also in some non-denominational settings that I've been connected to. Heidi, what churches have you been connected to?
Non-denominational. I didn't start going to church till I was 14, and it was very, quote-unquote, spirit-led, high energy. That's what I jumped into. But yeah, I jumped into the deep end when I was 14, and yeah, just kind of mellowed out from there, step by step.
And since you met me, you've now been connected to kind of the
now connected to the Methodist
boring mainline. Yeah.
But also, I can be vulnerable there, and that's fine. I'd rather have that.
And Wongi, how about your kind of faith?
Same Methodism
experiences.
United Methodist for a long time. Yes.
Yeah, so one of the things that I noticed growing up and like going to, I think specifically going to like Bible studies or small group Bible studies, this is, for those of you listening, a phenomenon within churches, maybe within the last, well, in Methodism, it's been going on for a few hundred years, but it feels like it got real big in maybe the 70s or 80s and has continued through. A lot of people doing these maybe in homes, or maybe it's at church, or maybe in some other setting. And I noticed some of the ones that I would go to or be a part of, some people would be like vulnerable really, really quickly, to the point where I was like, oh, I don't know if we know each other that well yet, you know? And it's something that I would call like the classic overshare, where there are some of us who seem to not share enough, and there are others where it seems like, and maybe it's just because they don't mind. They'll just share anything. But it also makes me wonder, like, yeah, is there a time? Is there an overshare? Or am I wrong about that? Maybe we should just always share. What do you guys think?
I think we all know those people that kind of hit you in the face with everything. So it's like, oh, we're going there. Okay, all your whole life story. Got it. Okay. trying to be nice and non-judgmental. We listen, we don't judge.
Yeah.
It can also, yeah, I agree. There's this book called The Culture Map, and there's this business professor, and she talks about different cultures. It's really written for it's really for professionals so they can understand if, let's say you're working with somebody from a different country, how they work. And she gave this example of, if I recall correctly, there's this Russian guy and this American guy. They're on this long flight. Of course, the American guy's just talking about his life, whatever, right? And so this Russian guy's like, man, this guy's being really vulnerable and telling me about his life. Like, so when they get off, the assumption of the Russian guy is like, we're friends now because you've been so vulnerable with me. Like, you've told me everything, so many details that normally people would not share. But then when they walk out and go to baggage claim, American dude is out. The Russian guy's like, what the? I thought we were friends, right? So her point in the book is, in certain cultures, you don't sit there. You know, we get, you know, I'm not saying everybody does this. I'm just saying, but generally, you know, where we are, people will dive deep and tell you their details, right? But as soon as you leave that plane, like, they forget you. So the point there is, even the oversharing can seem normal depending on where you are. And then different cultures may both seem abnormal, but also send the wrong message. Maybe this is my point, right? Because if somebody feels like you're being vulnerable or oversharing, that you're drawing them in somehow, which may not be true, which then confuses them. And then ends up, then they're like, is that fake or not? I don't get it, right? But then that's what I'm saying, like, her examples are, you know, in the book, and she peppers many different ones, is just like, the idea of, you need to understand different cultures, and then she kind of sort of maps out how different cultures, you know, what you fit in like nonverbal communication or verbal communication. Some cultures are very direct, others are very beat around the bush, right?
Yeah.
And or even the vulnerability. But it made me think about that example.
That actually reminds me of when I was a teenager in church. And some of the church ladies loved to be part of the youth group, and they would find reasons to hang out with the teenagers. Mm-hmm. One of them caught me on a bad day, and I shared some personal information, and that, you know, went on my way, didn't think anything of it, and found out later that she felt snubbed because anytime I saw her afterwards, she had this connection that she thought we were besties because I had opened up to her in this vulnerable moment. And to me, she was just one of the many adults that I happened to talk to, and not realizing she took that as,
now we're tight.
We are tight. I am your person. So I can totally see that miscommunication.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wonder if, like, if you're listening now and you're like saying to yourself, am I an oversharer? Since it's cultural, I guess probably we should all ask that question. Like, am I sharing appropriately? Would somebody think this is an overshare or not? Maybe don't overthink it. I don't know. But I wonder if some people would think of me as an oversharer, though I don't think of myself as someone who does. And I'm sure that there are people who do. What I feel is like, oh, that was, you shared a lot there. You know, classic overshare, who like don't think that at all, right? Mm-hmm. So certainly contextual, certainly cultural.
Mm-hmm. It's not inauthentic, but I think sometimes it's how people receive it, like you're saying, Heidi. You know, vulnerability is in the eye of the receptor or something like that, right? Whoever, you know, like how they take it, right? Which true, you know, coming back to your example, I like that one, Heidi. Like, don't assume just because somebody shares something with you that now the bond is there, right? And it's not being bad. I'm just saying, right? They may be sharing because you are in a group, right? Or you just happen to be together on a very long flight and they're just in that state and they just share something with you. And I think that's great in that moment. But if you think that necessarily that created a certain bond, maybe it did, maybe it didn't, but also it doesn't give you permission, like we were saying in the last episode, to just keep circling back on that over and over again, right? Which is what some people do sometimes. So I don't know, like I just brought that example up because, you know, it can be cultural, right? Love to hear from the audience if you agree with what I'm saying. But another example, I'll just give one more example from the same book about an American who has a German boss, and they're doing a performance review, right? And German boss just goes straight to the point. Mike, you need to do this, do this, and then you improve and you're good, mm-hmm. right? And so at, and Erin, the author, is actually consulting with these people. She actually helps them career coaching. She, so the American is like, I had an awful performance review. Just focused on the negatives. I'm not doing good, yada, yada, yada. So Erin goes to the German boss, like, how is it? Oh, she's doing awesome. Like, she's great. Like, we love her. Like, I mean, like, okay, but something didn't connect, right? And so, quote unquote, what the American wanted is maybe some vulnerability, or what we like, maybe it's not vulnerability, but sort of this nice sandwich. So sometimes we sneak vulnerability in with a nice sandwich. We're like, I want to be vulnerable and tell you that you didn't do a good job in your performance review, but I'm going to do it in a certain way. I'm going to tell you you did good at this, tell you the bad news, and then end it up with another nice thing so I can couch the vulnerability or my mask my vulnerability in a certain way so that it's not as direct. Yeah, how about good. That, right? You know, or if, you know, so then it can feel like, okay, like, we'll see, like, whatever, kind of awkward, you know? But culturally, too, the idea of what each person may feel they put out from a vulnerability standpoint can be very different, and even people can receive that in very different ways.
Definitely.
Yeah, you use the phrase, like, overshare is in the eye of the beholder, maybe, or like maybe the ear of the beholder, or you said something like that. And that was great. And I think that's true, right? And I think maybe there isn't such a thing as oversharing. Maybe there is. I'm just, this is for conversation. Maybe it really is in the ear of the beholder, because we get uncomfortable when other people share what's messy in their lives, right? So it's not that they're oversharing, it's that you're like, you're under accepting or under holding space for that person. And I'm gonna switch my mode right here and say, maybe there's no such thing as oversharing. There's only people like me who end up being like, I don't think I really want to hear about this. Maybe we should be a little bit more like, and that takes some vulnerability too, right? Kind of more open to hearing what's hard in somebody else's life, and allow myself to be uncomfortable because somebody else is feeling comfortable in that moment with me and being able to share that. And I also get that, like, stranger on a plane, maybe actually easier to talk to about really hard things than somebody you're going to see again or see often.
Totally.
So I'm sure that's going on. You've got that kind of like, that like, airline confessional thing. Ooh, airline confessional.
Yeah.
Oh, that's like dashboard confessional. Maybe that's just an emo band that I'm stealing from. But there is some feeling of that where it's like, oh yeah, I could walk into some confession booth.
And there's or like when you're at a bar or something like that alone. Like you go to a restaurant, you're dining alone in your bar or something, and just strike up conversation. Then you know you never see these people again. So.
You know, for me, like on a chairlift skiing, it's like, yeah, I might not ever see you again. We can talk about all the things if you want.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, for those of you who don't know, Mike and I have both been married previously, and my first divorce was very messy, and I didn't tell.
Did you just say first divorce?
My first divorce. First and only.
Okay. Thank you. First. Just checking.
First. Not planning does to that... have a follow-up. Just to clarify for everyone.
First and last. That's what she was saying.
The first and last was very messy and drawn out. And I think maybe two family members and a close friend knew what was going on. I didn't tell my employees, I didn't tell my clients, I didn't tell people at the dance studio till about maybe a year later they started finding out. You know, I did the whole Facebook, change my name. That was a big flag for everyone to be like, you know. But for me, a lot of it, I didn't feel like it was a fear of oversharing. I felt like if I gave a voice to it, that it made it more real. I didn't want that dirty, messy situation to have any more hold on the good things in my life. And so I undershared, as much as possible to, yeah. you know, we talked about having that label, you know, you broke your neck, you had a miscarriage, oh, you're divorced. I didn't want to walk around with that label. I didn't want the pity. I didn't want the opinions or advice. So the opposite end of the overshare is the undershare where, oh, you've been divorced for a year and I found out about it through Facebook, you know, because I just, like I said, I didn't want to give a voice to it. I didn't want that to take up any more space in my life than it already had.
Do you think that might be connected to the fact that you're more of an introvert?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, talking about my problems to a lot of people feels like work. Whereas I have those one or two people, Mwangi, I like you, how you compare it to currency, where those people earn access to your life. And so there's, you know, on one hand, I can count the people who I can trust and open up to, and that's enough for me. Other people have the personalities where they need to tell 14 people what they had for breakfast in order to feel good by the end of the day. I'm just not that person.
Yeah, and the kind of flip side of that for you is, and we talked about this in a previous episode, that you care less about what people think about you than I do. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
So you have the introversion, which you're like, I don't feel like the need to share this, but also the kind of like, don't give a heck.
Yeah, I don't. Heck. I don't need your don't thumbs up of approval for how I live my life.
Yeah. So whereas me, I might have the extroverted desire to share about something, but then the personality that I'm like, yeah, but I don't want you to know that, like, I'm not all like buttoned down and ready to go. But Heidi, you were mentioning things about, like, you know, divorce and kind of, you know, romantic relationships. And one of the things that I took a note on is that, like, couples can be happy and also have issues to work out, right? Both of those things can be true at the same time. Like, you could have a couple who's actually doing very, very well together, loving and feeling great about their relationship, and still has, like, yeah, issues that they might need help with. And that is, I guess, a more complex situation than most people maybe have time for or energy for or, like, bandwidth for. Like, it's complicated. And I think we all know that on some level. But we, I think, often want to pigeonhole people into, like, that person's doing well, that person's not doing well. Mm-hmm. These two people, their relationship is on the rocks. These two people, they're, like, you know, just awesome and never have any trouble. And I think appropriate vulnerability can put the lie to that, can, like, show how that's not true. It's not, like, it's always true that things are complicated, even for the very best of relationships, that, or even for the very worst, like, even the worst relationships, there are probably some bright spots and good things going on. And I think that's important to remember. That's another one of the things that's powerful about vulnerability. And I guess another, like, warning that finding appropriate ways to be vulnerable or the right spaces is also key. Like, and I hope that we can make sure that our faith communities, whether that, you know, is churches like we're connected to, or any kind of spirituality that you're connected to, something that's bigger than just kind of your own personal thing, but also that, even if it's just your own personal thing, finding ways to be vulnerable in healthy ways that can make deeper connections with people in a balanced way that brings the kind of freedom that can allow us to thrive and to be our true selves. I loved that phrase, Heidi, to be our true selves, to take off the masks, to take off the armor, and to allow the true self to emerge. Do you guys have any thoughts on what kind of spaces can foster that? What kind of relationships can allow for that to happen?
I think in all three of these episodes, the thing that we have highlighted is that vulnerability isn't just for us. Our trials and tribulations help other people. if it's on the world stage or if it's, oh, someone else is having a relationship issue, someone else is going through these things that I'm dealing with that maybe I don't want to highlight, but it could be helping someone in my life without me realizing it if I express what I'm actually going through.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna be honest about what environment a place there is, and like the political state of this country right now is not that, right? There are churches that are not doing that what you're talking about, Mike. So this idea of also like actually shunning vulnerability and becoming macho and becoming hard and totally ignoring that, and that being easier probably to take on, or you know, becoming very black and white, less the gray you're talking about having stuff to work on while simultaneously being happy. It's not that, I'm not saying there aren't pockets of that. I'm not trying to be negative, but I also want to call out the fact that where we are today is it's bigger, or maybe vulnerability is not as celebrated, right?
Yeah.
Or is questioned, right? And if you do have it, perhaps you're questioning your patriotism or your Christianity or something like that, and that becomes very hard to navigate, right? That can put you back in a shell, right?
Yeah, I've seen that happen so many times. I've seen it working in youth ministry, working with adolescent kids. I've seen it happen, and I've had to like have conversations with adult leaders where, you know, a kid expresses some sort of doubt or question, and that kid gets shut down in the middle of the conversation. I haven't seen it happen recently. I think we've established a pretty good culture around that at the church where I'm at now. But I've seen it happen where, and you know what? To be really vulnerable, I've probably been that adult that has unintentionally without realizing it, kind of shut down a conversation like that. And we all have doubts. We all have questions. We all have kind of spots where it comes to faith or spirituality, or wondering if there's more than just kind of our material world that we know we're not safe to talk about in certain situations, right? And so, like Mwangi, like you said, the current political climate is one, like, it's not safe to talk about certain things with certain people, or maybe even with huge portions of our population, right? On both sides, I'll mention, or on every side. I don't want to just say there are two sides. On every side, like there are people who probably feel that they can't talk to me about their deeply held beliefs because they know kind of, or they believe they know where I come from, and vice versa. We're like, I wouldn't bring this up with some of my friends or even family, because I'm like, nope, there's no way this conversation could go well. And maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe it really would go fine. But I have the feeling that it wouldn't. Right. And I definitely see that in churches, especially when there is a kind of leaning away from curiosity and toward certainty, leaning away from kind of mystery and wonder, and into like very firm doctrine and having like the kind of orthodoxy that requires that is very rigid and doesn't allow for it doesn't allow for questions or doubts.
Right.
So I guess any faith community that leans that way, and that could be in any religion or spiritual tradition, is going to, I think, put a damper on vulnerability, and people won't feel free to take off the armor, take off the mask, allow for part of that, at least part of that true self, to come forward, because it's too dangerous.
Yeah. No, I was definitely that kid coming into a church when I was 14 and trying to fit in and learn the slang and learn the verses and what do we believe? tell me what, and having those questions, and like you said, quickly being shot down by adults of, you don't question the man of God. The whole, like, we believe this because it's in the Bible. Well, can you explain why we don't like gay people? Or no, because we just don't. Okay, so I'm not allowed to question those things. And so, yeah, a lot of the...
And to be clear, listener, that was a former church when she was 14.
That was not. That was why I left. So, yeah, a lot of churches, a lot of... Christian nationalism right now, there is no questioning. You just do. Which is a very dangerous place to be in.
Yeah, and if you question, you are whatever, right? You're the anti-whatever, right? Because it's
heretic.
So blatant. Yeah, you're heretic or something like that, right?
You're the enemy now.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so creating spaces where... curiosity is expected and certainty isn't, creating spaces where questions are welcome and doubt is expected, creating spaces where we don't judge because something isn't like going swimmingly mm-hmm. for you, but we hold space for the pain of that. I think can all of those things can help in relationships, mm-hmm. in communities, in organized religion kinds of, you know, faith places. That was very elegant how I said that. Organized religion faith places.
Words
sometimes don't always flow as well as I'd hoped. Yeah, I think all of that can be really beautiful. And we hope that Tapestry is actually one of those places that... maybe you've never heard people talk about it this way before. Maybe you have. Maybe you wish you had somebody to talk to about these kinds of things. Well, we'd like to be those people. And our website, tapestrytalk.org, can give you some resources for how to connect with us. You guys, do you have other things you want to say about this kind of, why do we hide? How do we take off our masks? Why don't we exhibit the mess? Mm-hmm.
I think it comes down to there is no correct answer, that we are supposed to be vulnerable to help others, but also taking a chance in what is a safe space and what are those safe people that deserve that vulnerability.
I couldn't say better.
Thank you.
Well, if you want to check out more about Tapestry, tapestrytalk.org, you can see all the things there. Thank you for my wonderful conversation partners here.
Thank you for having me, guys.
Oh, you're welcome. Should come back. Just come back.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. And we'll hopefully see all of you next time. Bye.
Take care. Be good.
Bye.
The Tapestry Podcast is produced by Stephen Bailey. Original music was scored by Taylor Martin. Our hosts are Haley Bird, Wangi Ndonga, and me, Mike Orr. Special thanks to Lauren Richmond Jr. and Resonate Media. You can learn more about Tapestry and join the conversation on our Discord channel at tapestrytalk.org. Thanks for joining us.